Hello there. As we begin the sales cycle called prospecting, there's two components that I think are critically important that we start with. The first component is the two words that I have put into the design of all of the curriculums within the Sales Cycle Mastery Program, and that is sustainability and intentionality. What sustainability means to me is that we have created a system that when you get out of your own way and you implement the system, that it will produce sustainable results for a prolonged period of time. The opposite of which is a sales idea that you think of something at the moment and then you do it, but it works so well, you stop. The second word is intentionality. Intentionality is probably easier just to talk about what it's not, and that is it's not winging it. It's getting sales reps to get away from winging it and saying everything with a methodical purpose because it's been practiced, it's been rehearsed, and they have a system to do it right. The system is an 8-step system, which I will go through a detailed amount of videos and showing you how to do each and every one of those 8 steps. And I can assure you ahead of time that there is none of those 8 steps that you won't look at individually and feel as if, wow, that's going to be difficult to do, or that's not something I think I can do. In and of themselves, each one of those steps will be doable. And the third is being able to, every now and then, get up to 30,000 feet and assess it and figure out, is it working? And what's beautiful about the Sales Cycle Mastery System for prospecting is in the 8 steps, not only does it give you the ability to learn how to do it, but it also gives you the ability to be a self-diagnostic tool when you're assessing it. What I mean about that is that you can sit back 3 months from now, 3 years from now, and you can give yourself a grade on a scale of 0 to 5 in each one of those 8 steps to figure out whether or not it's working. So let's start with figuring out whether or not we agree or disagree. The single biggest reason advisors fail to grow in the business is that they do not have enough high quality people to call on. So if we can agree on that, then we can also agree on the fact that it's probably worth a tremendous amount of effort and time to spend on sharpening the blade of our saw as it relates to prospecting skills. If you introduce me to a rep that's in a rut or is bored in their career over time, it's typically because they have gotten away from prospecting and they are bored by the people that they see. So I love Stephen Covey's habit that says, begin with the end in mind. Let's try that here. Why do we prospect? And although the answer might seem obvious to you, I don't think it is for a lot of reps. Because you see, it's different when we first start in the business. At that time, we prospect because it's a survival technique. We prospect because we have to. We don't want to fail. We want to make it. But at a certain point in time, that goes away. We have enough activity to keep us busy. And therefore, why do we prospect then? And so I want you to think about something. Start out by thinking about, if you can for a moment, your best 3 clients, not only just measured by the amount of business that they give you, their financial potential, your value system, how you interact, where you are at in your stage of life, and any other detail that is important to you. You get that in your mind? Now imagine, what would your career be like if every single client you had was just like them? You would love your job. It wouldn't be a job. It would be something that you would be passionate about. And that's exactly why we want to prospect at this stage of our business. So as we get started and we're talking about prospecting, we're talking about getting referrals. So even though it might sound basic, let's define what I believe a referral is. A referral is when someone introduces someone they care about to someone they trust. What it's not is gathering a bunch of names. All too often, reps go out in the course of a month and they get 30, 40, 50, what they call referrals, but essentially is all they are is names. And they don't have any real connection from the person that gave it to them. That's not a referral. I have found in my teaching over almost 30 years in this business that we must start out by recognizing whether or not something could potentially be broken, or even better yet, has a lot of potential for improvement. Because you see, if you feel that what you're doing right now is good enough, it's not going to be something that you're all that open to. So let's begin by going through this brief assessment, and we'll do so together. The first question is, my referral numbers are inconsistent from month to month. Is that you? Do some months you get 30, some months you get 50, some months you get 80? The second is, I feel the meeting out and then decide whether or not to prospect. In other words, if I think everything's going to go well, I think the likelihood that the nominator is going to give me some referrals, I do it, but not consistently. The third one is, I sometimes come prepared with a list of names to feed, but not always. The fourth one is, my language is different depending on the meeting I'm in. I ask one person this way, another person this way, and another person a different way. And last but not least, the fifth one, I simply run out of time to prospect at some meetings. So the truth is, if you have a yes to any of these, there's an opportunity for growth for you. If you have a yes to all of them, there's a massive opportunity of growth for you. I have learned in almost 30 years of teaching that our beliefs drive our behaviors. And so therefore, as a teacher, as a consultant, as a leader, as a trainer, if we don't pay attention to what's going on in the 6 inches in between our ears and what our students and clients' beliefs are, I don't think we have a realistic chance of changing their behavior. So in this section, what I want you to do is I want you to start out with, what is your mindset? And I will tell you that I break this down into current mindset and empowered mindset. For the majority of reps I work with, their current mindset starts out with so much self-defeated thinking. They might say things like, I don't know enough yet. I don't deserve referrals because I haven't put any massive plans together for my clients yet. I haven't added any great value, so I shouldn't ask yet. Or this is the death sentence one. My clients are doing me a favor when they give me a referral. When you have that mindset, you're already pretty far behind the eight ball. Let me make my point and share with you what I think is the empowered mindset that puts you in a situation that already sets you up for success. And that would be, I bring tremendous value in the questions I ask. In other words, if I'm gonna go in and work with a potential client, whether they choose to take action or not, the quality of the questions that I ask gets them thinking in ways that nobody else have ever gotten them to think. I have integrity and honesty. Hopefully this would be everybody, but unfortunately we all know it's not. And when you bring integrity and honesty to the table and you're willing to jump on a sword for it, which means that you're not doing anything for anybody that you wouldn't do for yourself, your best friend, your brother, your father, or the most close friends you have in your life, that integrity and honesty is very empowering. Along with, I won't sell anything to anybody that I don't own myself, given the same situation and the same circumstances. Have you ever met somebody that got married on a blind date and it turned out to be a healthy marriage and they've been married for a while? I promise you that for the rest of their life, they always remember who connected them, who set them up on that date. You have that same opportunity. So many clients out there have their financial affairs all discombobulated. They don't know what to do, and they have a lot of anxiety and fear around it. When you come in their life and you do it the way that you bring value to the table, you change the level of financial security that they have in their household, you have given them an incredibly powerful gift. And so that is an empowered mindset. Once again, that when your clients give you a referral, you're giving them the opportunity to give a gift to somebody that they truly care about. So do you ever wonder why your clients would give you a referral? Has that been something that you've ever thought about? Here's what I can assure you, it's not. Your clients don't think about the language that you use and then determine whether or not they are going to give you a referral because you nailed it, or not give you a referral because you stumbled over it. That's not why clients give you referrals. Why clients give you referrals is based on their experience that they have with you. Your language is for you. You see, when you get your language really good and you do the same language all the time, then what you can do is you can think about the other aspects of body language, which is posture, tone inflection, voice level, and smile on your face, so you deliver it with purpose and with passion. But at the end of the day, they don't know what your language should be. They have not heard it precisely in the past. They are going to give you a referral based on the experience that they have with you. So make sure you focus on that. So now it's time to take a look at the system. You can see that there is 8 components to the prospecting system. I like to call them stages in the sales cycle of prospecting. I will go through methodically each and every one of these. However, here's what I want to promise you. There will not be one of these stages that you look at, listen, and learn and say, whoa, that is going to be difficult for me. However, it's the consistency of putting the system in front of your mind and what you think and stepping 1, 2, 3, 4, each and every single time. You have to get out of your own way and you have to follow the system. And what I can promise you, when you do in its entirety, you will become a master at your skill set around prospecting and the results will blow you away. Sometimes the steps of these prospecting systems are so obvious that when you see them, you're like, oh yes, how could I not be doing that? The first fits into that category. And that is that you must begin each month by knowing how many leads you need that month, broken down by segment. And on top of that, you need to be in tune every day with where you stand towards that target. Let me give you an analogy and then I'll bring it back to what this means in prospecting. I found through research that the number one weight loss program in the world, without even a, not even a close second, is not Atkins, it's not South Beach, it's not all the others we read about. It's simply this. It's having a poster board in your bathroom with a marker on it. It's having a scale in your bathroom on the floor. And on the poster board, you write the ideal weight. That's the goal. And then every single morning, you step on the scale. Regardless if you're feeling good or bad that day, every single morning you step on the scale, you read the number, and you write it down on the poster board. And then you have to have a system where every single day you begin by checking in where you stand, getting on the scale. What I teach in this system is a standing 7-minute meeting with your staff. Imagine if the very first thing your staff did when he or she walked into your office is you gathered and had a standing 7-minute meeting, and one of the items on that agenda was, what is our number for the month and where do we stand? This is an important process, and I'll tell you one other thing, is that I don't like the mentality that more is better. I like the mentality that people that get to work with you are lucky, and there's a limit as to what you can handle because you're busy. So if you want 48 referrals, you don't want 50, you want 48, but you want 48 of the right kind. And so therefore more is not always better. This is the first step in the system, and what I've always found out is that which we track and measure on a regular basis is that which we will achieve. The next step in the prospecting sales cycle is around your language and getting you to have it down so that you use the same language and are able to deliver it the same way each and every time that brings you confidence and brings you consistency. I've already taught you that your clients aren't going to give you referrals because of your language. But when you have your language down, it's all the other nonverbal aspects of communication that you can nail. The tone of voice, your posture, your level of energy and passion around it. We want to get you to the point that you don't have to think about what it is that you're going to say because you're changing it from one person to the next based on either how you feel or what career or what industry they are in. So utilizing the same language each and every time is critically important. And yes, it will take practice, but that practice will pay huge dividends. I'll give you my language. We'll make up some names that I'm sitting down with a prospective client, Tom Smith, and I want to get introduced to Mary Jones. I'd say, Tom, do you have 5 more minutes that I can steal? Great, thank you. As you know, I work on favorable introductions because if it wasn't for your good friend, Ben Smith, I would have never been introduced to you. I've taken the time and liberty with my team to identify an individual by the name of Mary Jones, who I think is in your network and that you know really well. And what I'd love to ask you is if you would be willing to introduce me so that I can meet Mary in the same fashion as I met you. Now let's assume for now that that person says yes, then what we got to do is ask for an introduction. So this is how I would do it. I would say, man, thank you so much, but I really do need an introduction from you because what I found out is that if I call Mary without an introduction from you, I've only got about a 50% chance of meeting her. And with as excited as I am about Mary Jones, if I can get an introduction from you, I can get that up to 85 or 90%, and I like that a whole lot more. So here's what I would like to do. My staff has put together an email that is a great introductory letter. When I get back to my office, I'm going to forward that over to you. You can read it. And providing the fact that you feel comfortable with it, you can copy and paste it, shoot it over to Mary, CC me so I know that it's been sent, and then I'll follow up in 48 hours and I will go from there. Would you be willing to do that for me? The next step of the prospecting sales cycle is for you to have a professional, concise, and compelling response to the top 3 to 5 objections that you're going to hear and be able to use those each and every time. Let's face it, you've already heard them hundreds, if not thousands of times. They shouldn't make you feel uncomfortable, and they definitely shouldn't catch you off guard. Let's start with the first two, because my response to both of those is almost identical. And that is the fact that when you ask to get introduced to Mary Jones, that they say, oh, she's all set, or she's already got a guy. And what I would say in that situation is, I would say, Ben, I can understand and appreciate that. With the caliber and quality that Mary Jones is, I'd be shocked and surprised if she didn't already have a guy. But let me tell you how that normally plays out. Like I just did with you, I would take her through that process, and one of two things will happen. The first is that I confirm, as an outsider, that all her I's are dotted, all her T's are crossed, that she is all set. And when she does that and she feels that, she's even that much more confident about the guy that she works with. The second thing that can also happen is I can uncover some blind spots that the guy she's working with has not uncovered, that she was never aware of. And if that happens, I can assure you that she's very glad that she met me, because without meeting me, she would have never been aware of those things. So let me ask you a question. I feel either outcome is positive. Wouldn't you agree? Great. What's the best number to get a hold of her? Now let's go to the next one. And the next one that I found to be very common is, let me talk to her first. And I would say, Ben, thank you so much. Here's what I have found. If you don't talk to her first, I've only got about a 50% chance of meeting her. However, if you do talk to her first and give me a powerful introduction, I've got more like an 85 or 90% chance of meeting her. And with the caliber and the quality of Mary Jones, I sure do like 85 to 90 a lot better. But here's also what I found out. And that is that my clients are busy. And although they have good intentions, you want to do me a favor, what you can do is you can call them up, but that takes time. And so what I'm going to do is, when I get back to my office, I'm going to have my staff shoot you an email. You can go ahead and read that email. And to the extent that you like it and feel comfortable with it, go ahead and copy and paste it, shoot it over to Mary. And then what I'll do, if you BCC me, I'll follow up with her in 48 hours. Can I count on you to do that? Before I give you the next stage of the prospecting sales cycle, I want to give you a couple numbers and see if you can guess. The first number is 87%. The second isn't really a number, it's a question, and that is, what do you think clients do not give you a referral 87% of the time from? So those other objections that I gave you represent only 13% of the quote unquote objections. This one represents 87%. So do you have it yet? If you don't, I'll give it to you now, and that is, I can't think of anyone. And here's what I'm here to tell you. It isn't your client's job to think of anyone. It's your job. The client job is to get you introduced. The client's job is to use their prestige, their influence, and their relationship to make the meeting happen, not to come up with a name. That's your job. So the next stage of this sales cycle is learning how to feed a name. In an ideal, perfect world, you and or your team would have done some research, and at the end of the meeting, when you go into prospecting, you are simply going to be able to have 2 or 3 names to feed that you're asking for an introduction to. When you do that, they can't say they can't think of anybody. It's impossible. And so all they can say is either sure, or they can use one of the other 3 that I already went through with you, and that is, let me talk to them first, they're all set, or they already have a guy. So what we want to do in this stage is we want to make sure that we are always, always feeding a name. And it's imperative that you get really, really good at it. So let's start out first and foremost in an ideal state with from a feed list. At the end, it would just simply be you asking for the referral in a fashion like I've already taught you, where I use the hypothetical name of Mary Jones, but I got that through either myself or my team doing a little bit of research. And what I want you to learn here is how to stay more focused on getting to understand your client in the business meeting by asking them questions that first and foremost are around for you to understand them so that you can better serve them as a financial advisor. That's really important. But by doing so, there's an ancillary benefit that comes from that that also gives you names to feed. I'll give you an example of that. If you are sitting down with, let's say, a junior attorney that's been in a law firm for, let's say, 4 years, and you're saying to them, so what's next? And they tell you that their goal is to become partner. You figure out, well, how long is that? They say, well, it's usually about 7 or 8 years. And then the next question you might ask is, tell me, who is responsible for giving you that promotion? What is your level of relationship like with that person? How are you feeling about that? Who's your biggest competition? How many people were in your class 4 years ago when you started? How many of those will make partner? Who's your toughest competition? These questions help you understand their situation better. That's first and foremost. But now with the answers to those questions, I've got 3 or 4 or 5 names I can feed from the information that they shared with me. So in a perfect world, your staff's already got the research done, you're putting the list across the table, and you're asking for the referral with specific names. If you don't have the ability to do that, you're learning how to develop the art and the technique of extrapolating names from your business meeting so that you can also feed a name in that case. Either way, you're gonna avoid 87% of the objections that are out there. But I don't want you to be doing the feed list. In a perfect world, you've got a very competent staff. You let them know what it is that you're looking for. You put them in touch with somebody who has already mastered the art of developing a feed list, and therefore your time is spent much more effectively than sitting on Facebook, LinkedIn, and putting together a bunch of names. So good luck with that one. I feel it's incredibly important, and I'm excited to hear how it works for you. Before I start into this next stage of the prospecting cycle, I want you, if you're in your first couple years in the business, to plug your ears. And the reason I want to say that is because in your first couple years in the business, you have to prospect with anybody that can fog a mirror. You need massive amounts of activity and you need to learn. And so therefore activity, activity, activity is your theme in the first couple years. But after you get established, you shouldn't be asking everybody for referrals for a number of reasons. One of which is I have always found that people tend to refer you to people like themselves. And so therefore, if you have clients that you're starting to get a little bored with or you're not all that excited about meeting with when you see them on your calendar, I would highly recommend that you don't prospect with those people. Otherwise, you're just gonna get more people you're gonna be bored with and more people that you're not excited about. And so you wanna pick the people who are already at the level that you are trying to take your business to. That's number one. Number two, you wanna pick people that you've got a meaningful relationship with, that you've earned the social and professional capital to be able to ask this question to. Remember, this business should be getting easier and easier and easier and easier as you build it every single year. So if I've got 4 or 5 people that are on my calendar next week that I have scheduled to do annual reviews, let's just say on average, they've been clients of mine 4, 5, or 10 years. I've got all their assets, I've got all their insurance, I know we have a meaningful relationship. I'm actually looking forward to the meeting. We enjoy each other's company. We're at about the same stage in life. I'm going to pick those people. Then in addition, what I'm going to do is I'm gonna give those names to my staff so they can start working on building the feed list so that I'm prepared. In addition to which, I'm bringing intentionality to prospecting with them. Because you see, I know before the meeting even starts, at the end of the meeting, I'm gonna prospect with those people. And guess what? My staff knows that I'm gonna prospect with those people. So what that brings is, I'm not gonna run out of time. I'm not gonna forget to do it. Imagine this. Imagine you get this system down well, and your staff puts, let's say, 30 minutes of effort into one appointment to prepare a feed list that he or she is very proud of and is excited when you return to ask you how it went. And imagine you come back into the office and you say, oh, I ran out of time, or oh, I forgot to ask. That's not gonna go over too well. So it brings some personal accountability to it as well. So you identify the names you want, you're excited about who it is you're asking, your staff is getting you totally prepared for the meeting, both of you know that you're going to ask, you leave the time at the end of meeting to do so, and the results you're going to get from that are going to really be phenomenal. The next stage of the prospecting sales cycle is to start with an agenda and make sure prospecting is on it. However, don't ever do that with an initial meeting with a prospective client, and I'll explain why that is in a minute. But let's also be clear on the purpose of this. If I'm coming into a meeting with you and you're an existing client of mine, and let's just say that we're going to be doing an annual review, there's a couple things I want you to feel and I want to accomplish by utilizing an agenda. Number one is I want you to feel as if that I'm professional. I'm professional because of the fact that I'm prepared. I'm not just winging this meeting. In addition to which, I care enough about you to get permission and make sure that we're on the same page as opposed to me just coming in and doing whatever I feel I want to do. So if I'm going to start out with you and your name is Billy Thomas, I might say, Billy, before we get started today, let me tell you what my staff and I are prepared to review just to make sure that we're on the same page. Is that okay with you? And then I would say something like, in the first part of the meeting, what I want to do is I want to cover all the assets that you have with me and make sure that you don't have any questions about it and make sure that you understand every ounce of what you have. Then I want to go over an insurance review and I want to give you an update on all of that. In addition to which, I want to go over a balance sheet and I want to update on all the changes that occurred in the last year in which we weren't together. And then I also want to go over all the goals and the vision that you have explained to me over the years that are important to you and make sure none of those have changed as well. And then last but not least, Billy, what I want to do is I want to be able to pick your brain for a couple of people that my team and I have identified that I think are in your market that I'd like to ask for some help with. So before I get started today, that's what I have on our agenda. Are we on the same page? And then that client says, yeah, that's good. What they just did is first and foremost is they experienced you as professional. They experienced you as somebody who is prepared. They experienced you as somebody who cares enough about them to check in before you just start being a bull in a china shop and doing your own agenda. And then last but not least, they just gave you permission to prospect at the end of the meeting when they said, yeah, that's okay, let's get started. Now let me go back to what I said at the beginning of the meeting. I don't want you to do this agenda with a prospective new client. It wouldn't be professional, it wouldn't be appropriate. Imagine if you're a brand new prospective client, you've known me for 3 minutes, and in the very beginning of the meeting, I'm pointing to an agenda and I'm saying, oh, by the way, at the end of this meeting, I'm gonna prospect with you. You haven't even figured out whether or not you wanna work with me. You haven't even figured out whether or not you like me yet. And so therefore, in a new meeting like that, it wouldn't be appropriate. But I use this agenda in all of my annual reviews, and I found it to be extraordinarily helpful for all the reasons that I've already stated. And then last but not least would be that if you open up a meeting and you say in the agenda that you're going to prospect at the end of the meeting, you're really, really, really highly likely to do it and to follow through on it. The next step of the prospecting sales cycle is to learn how to be efficient and aware of your time so you do not run short in order to prospect. I developed this stage because many, many years ago, when I would mentor new reps, I would find out that more often than not, when a rep came back to work with me, they would simply say, hey, Jim, I had great intentions, I just ran out of time. And I think more often than not, they probably really did. Sometimes it was an excuse, but more often than not, they really did. So therefore, running out of time to prospect is not good. Prospecting is the blood of your business. So therefore, you have to make sure that you can control the controllables so that you're not running out of time. And so it's important that you put some methodical attention into how you don't do this in your meeting. And I just want to walk through a few of those steps. First of all, let's start with just the environment. The environment can be important for you in the fact that if you're at a busy, let's say Starbucks or Panera Bread, it's very difficult to be efficient with your meeting as opposed to if you're in your private office, their private office, a private conference room, you can be much more effective in making sure that you are going to be on schedule and you are not going to run out of time. There's a few what I like to call tricks of the trade, if you may, or things that you can do to make sure that you stay focused. One little thing I used to do is I would take my watch off when I started a meeting. I would set it down on the table and I would tell the client, Mr. Ms. Prospect, I get really passionate about what I do and I lose track of time. So I hope you're not offended, but I can't be here forever. They probably like hearing that, by the way. I've got to have wheels rolling in an hour, so I'm going to set my watch down here and make sure that we stay on track. And so I also want to know throughout the meeting that if I'm going to prospect, I need to have minimum 10, 11, 12 minutes to do so. I don't want you to think that prospecting can be an afterthought. It's not uncommon for reps to conduct a 60-minute meeting, and in 90 seconds in the walk to the elevator, it's, oh, by the way, I work on referrals, who do you know? And it's like 58 and a half minutes for the meeting and 90 seconds to prospect. You can't do that. What you need to do is leave a solid 10 to 12 minutes at the end of the meeting, and all these little techniques and habits will help you stay on target for that. The next step in the prospecting sales cycle process is about how you figure out a system in which you and your team are gonna process the leads that you get. This is not something you can just wing. This is not something you can let stack up until it gets to be obnoxious and then you process them. This should be something that is identical, the same all the time. For one benefit is it prevents anything from falling through the cracks. Let's face it, if you're doing this the right way, you're processing a lot of activity. You've got to have a system to make sure things don't fall through the cracks. Second of all is that you want to bring professionalism, which is meaning that you are always going to do what you say you're going to do. Last but not least, this is big. When your clients give you an introduction and that person turns into a client, what are you doing to follow up with them? I think that's a big opportunity missed by most reps. I used to use handwritten note cards with a small Starbucks gift card written in it. The reality of it is I found handwritten notes to be very effective in saying thank you from a genuine perspective. But imagine this. These are two things you want to avoid. Is that you are in an annual review with your client. It's a year later. And the client looks at you and says, hey, Jim, hey, whatever happened with that referral I gave to my sister Mary? There's two things that you could say that neither one would be good. Number one would be if you said, oh, you know what? I forgot to call her, or I never got around to calling her. Thanks for the reminder. I'll do so. That's not good for obvious reasons. And the second one is that, oh, she became a client, by the way. Thank you. Because what that tells her is that had she not asked, you would have never said thank you. And I just wouldn't want to find that out if I was the client that way. So this process is important. You work on one with your staff. What's most important is that it's consistent, it's the same, it's predictable, and that you and your staff are on the same page as exactly what it is. So now you have the whole system. I told you at the beginning of the curriculum that there wouldn't be any of the 8 steps that you would look at in and of themselves and feel as if it was too difficult to do. Each and every one of those, all of you have the capability of doing. You just can't take 1 or 2 of them and expect transformational growth. So when you embrace transformational change and you get comfortable with the uncomfortable, then and only then can you expect transformational growth. So don't just tweak it. Don't just make subtle changes. Embrace the system. Get out of your own way. And always remember this. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. So as we look at this one pager, which is really what I feel is such an exciting aspect of P2P Group, on each and every one of our stages of the sales cycle, we create a one pager, and it works in 2 fashions. The first is as we go through this page for you to learn exactly what each and every one of the steps of the sales cycle is, and for you to get taught how to do them. However, at the same time, it's that other piece called the assessment that 5 years down the road, you can pull out this one pager and you can give yourself a grade on 0 to 5 and ask yourself, 0 meaning I'm not doing it at all anymore, and 5 meaning, man, I'm nailing that. You'll know exactly where the low-hanging fruit is and you'll know what you need to do to right the ship and get back on track. So let me just give you an executive summary of this one pager for the prospecting system. The first step we talked about was begin each month by knowing how many leads you need that month. And especially know where you stand every single day in relationship to that goal. I taught you to use the 7-minute stand-up meeting to do that. The second is utilize the same language each and every time. I told you that reps are not going to give you referrals because of your language, but your language is for you and it'll give you confidence. And when you get it down to the point that you have done it thousands of times, you can focus on the other aspects of communication, the nonverbal aspects, and deliver it with power and purpose and passion. The next stage, the third step, was have a professional and concise and compelling response to the top objections that you get, so that you react to those smooth as silk, almost as if it didn't even happen, and you do so without being caught off guard and without being feeling uncomfortable because you've heard them hundreds, if not thousands of times. And then the next step was how to avoid 87% of the objections that you get, and that is that have a process to effectively feed a name. I told you that it's not your client's job to think of anybody. That's your job to think of people. Your client's job is to use their prestige, their influence, and the strength of their relationship to get you introduced. But you're the one that thinks of the name, and having that feed list either through your team or through what you can do in the meeting with asking good questions. The fifth step would probably be a breath of fresh air for most people I teach, and that is that you don't have to ask for referrals in every single meeting. It's a sense of relief. We grow up as new reps that if we don't ask everybody in every meeting, we feel guilty. And I taught you that once you get to a certain point, you don't have to do that anymore. So that next step, that fifth step, is to be able to identify Wednesday or Thursday of the prior week, the 4, 5, or 6 people the following week that you want to be prepared to prospect with, and then give those names to your staff. And then the next step we talked about was to start the meeting with an agenda. I cautioned you not to do that with a brand new prospective client, but in every single one of your annual reviews, you should bring an agenda to the meeting. And if this is somebody that you pick that you want to prospect with, prospecting should be on that agenda. And then the second to last step was be efficient and aware of your time. Don't get to the point that you had great intentions, you had an awesome feed list prepared, but you just ran out of time because you weren't in control of the meeting, or it was in a bad location, or you didn't learn how to reel somebody back in, or you're winging your meetings too much and they're all over the board. Get really good at being efficient and aware of your time so that you don't run out of it. And then the very last step was create a system to process these leads that you work so hard to get and that you're so excited to have, and bring consistency to that system so that you and your team know exactly what you're doing, when you're doing it, how you're doing it, you're following through, you're telling the client what you're gonna do, and then you're doing that every time. They will not get lost in the weeds, and you will have a process that delivers consistent results. So there you have it. You learned how to do it by this first one pager, and in the future, you can assess it by coming back to it. Best of luck to you.